Hello, Still Loading listeners. What you are about to hear is a small little bonus clip from the Still Bonding podcast that has been going on over on Patreon for the $5 patrons. If you like what you hear, please listen to the end of the 20-minute clip here or so, and you'll get to hear how you can also get access to the Still Bonding podcast. It's been going on for 6 or 7 months now. This is actually the 7th James Bond movie that we have covered. And for those who don't know, it is the show where two friends bond over 007. And my friend Eric and I from the Monster Madness podcast started this about 7 months ago, and it's been a great time. Now, Erica is not in this episode due to some scheduling conflicts, and we also had some mic issues with my one guest, but we were able to fix them about 5-ish minutes into the episode, and luckily most of that is just me talking, so it doesn't affect it too much, but I wanted to at least make you all aware, just in case you're wondering why the audio for my one guest sounds a little noisy. However, we were able to fix it for the most part. But trust me, this is a fantastic show. And if you like what you hear, please consider subscribing to the Patreon. You can find all of that info in the show notes, and I won't pester you again with Patreon shenanigans throughout the rest of this little teaser. So with all that said, here is a little bonus, a little sousan, a little treat of the Still Bonding podcast, which on this episode, we are talking Diamonds Are Forever.
Diamonds are forever. They are all I need to please me. They can stimulate and tease me. They won't leave in the night. I've no fear that they might desert me. Diamonds are forever.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to this new episode of Still Bonding, the James Bond podcast, where, at least on this episode, three friends bond over 007. I am your host, Josh Koval, and we are here to discuss Diamonds Are Forever. Now, Erica could not make it to this recording session due to, oh man, it's been a week, let me tell you. I'm not going to go into details, especially because A, a little too personal, B, these guys have already heard it twice, so there's no need for me to repeat it a third time. But she tried to be here and just crazy things happened. But thank God for these two studs joining me, pinch hitters. You might remember them from the Thunderball episode. I am joined by my good old buddy, Bob. Bob, how are you doing today?
I'm fine, boss. How you doing, folks?
All right, let's buckle up, baby. And of course, Chris, a.k.a. the British Bond Addict. Chris, how are you doing, my friend?
Oh, I'm in a perfect mood to chat about a Bond film.
Of course. And this Bond film is, wow, what a movie, let me tell you.
It's got everything. It's got Las Vegas. It's got homosexuality. It's got diamonds. It's got Jimmy Dean.
It's got Jimmy Dean. It's, if you want, listeners, if you were craving, starving for a movie with so many shots of night for day, that or day for night, excuse me, then this is your movie. If you were craving a movie with scorpions and funeral homes somehow having a bizarre connection to each other, sort of, this is the movie for you. If you wanted to see two gay henchmen, one overacting within an inch of his life and the other underacting within an inch of his life, this is the Bond film for you. It has it all.
So it's the perfect Bond film for schizophrenics.
Pretty much. Pretty much. This movie is wild and beyond. It's just, I love it. It's so goofy. It's so bizarre. Like, even in the very beginning, I have so much to talk about with this film. But before we get started, I want to hear from both of you your personal experiences with this film. Like, Chris, when did you first watch it? Bob, I remember because you've been kind of going through a little bit of a Bond journey. So before we hear about your Bond journey, since watching Thunderball, Chris, I want to hear you. When did you first watch Diamonds Are Forever?
As with most Bond films, I can't actually remember the first time I watched it because my dad had Bond films on all the time. Right at the beginning, obviously we had them on VHS, and most weekends dad would throw a couple on. And this was the first one. This was the first Bond film he ever saw, so he had a really strong love for this film. And as a result, I saw it quite a bit as a kid. I've been on a roller coaster with it. Like recently, up until the pandemic, I wasn't the biggest fan of it. But since the pandemic, and you know, since we had our own personal insanities, I've kind of grown to love the insanity of this movie. And there's definitely been certain people online in the community. I'm going to drop one: Shamrock Shenanigans, Shamir. He has such a big love for this film that having watched this film with him, I can appreciate it in a completely different way from before. And it went from one of my lower down films to one of my absolute favorites.
It's this is one that for me has also grown a little bit. It's still not one of my favorites, but it's definitely grown. Now, Bob, you have been going on your own Bond journey ever since I asked you to do Thunderball, and you've been kind of watching a bunch of them recently. You'll message me every now and then being like, oh, we just watched this and holy fuck, this all happened. So you recently watched Diamonds Are Forever for the first time. So what were your kind of like, How did that go?
Well, first, I'd like to say this. Chris, your dad is just a character from Last of the Summer's Wine, isn't he?
You could say that.
As for my own experience with this movie, my wife and I just watched this movie for the first time in the past few weeks. And I gotta say, I can see where a lot of the genetic code of Austin Powers comes from. I'll tell you that much.
Dude, 100%. Expect this one, and also the previous Connery film, not the previous Bond movie, but the previous Connery film with You Only Live Twice has a lot of Austin Powers DNA in it.
Oh, yeah.
So the movie begins. I should say my own experience. Mine isn't that interesting. It was more just when for most of these, with the release of Skyfall in 2012, I went through and watched all of the Bond films at the time, and ended up really just kind of enjoying my journey with it, and didn't think much of this until I started listening to the Still the James Bonding podcast. I was about to say the Still Bonding, that's this own show, but the James Bonding podcast, and their kind of love of Bond kind of grew mine out even more so. So I ended up really kind of growing. I grew to love this movie, but more ironically than anything else. Like there's a lot of ironic love in this movie. It's one of those ones where it's like it's so bad it's good, and there's moments I genuinely like in this movie.
It definitely is the if anyone here has ever seen MST3K, it's the MST3K equivalent to a Bond film, if that makes sense.
100%.
I say one of the 100%. Things I find weird about it is what the Bond is really weird, especially coming off of Majesty's Secret Service, which is one of the most serious Bond films. But considering what happened later with Roger Moore's tenure, it was kind of what the Bond franchise needed to survive at that time. Granted, it was a real whiplash effect from the previous film, but it's interesting how late 60s and 70s and a little bit of the early 80s, it really needed that more kind of overly cliched now, but comic relief spy adventure.
And before we dive into it in earnest, I wanted to shout out a different podcast that did an episode on the rough drafts of the scripts for this movie. There's a Bond podcast out there from actually someone I believe you know as well, Chris, on Instagram, Licensed to Queer.
Yes, my person.
Yes, he has an amazing show, and it's all about James Bond from a queer perspective, and it's very... I find it just interesting because it's so different than what, you know, the typical perspective you hear on James Bond. And it's really kind of refreshing to see that. So he did an episode of his own podcast. Is his name David? Is that correct?
Yes, it is.
Yeah. Okay, good. I remembered it correctly. I'm awful with names at first. But he did a whole episode on his show about the three different rough drafts of this movie. So if I'm able to incorporate some of the stuff I learned from his show over into this, I will as we go along. But if I don't, definitely go check out the Licensed to Queer podcast, and you can see you can hear all about it. It's like about an hour long, and there's a lot of really interesting tidbits about the making of this movie. Listeners, we were going to debut a new segment that Chris was going to be involved with in this episode, where he was going to record a little something and describe the differences between the movie and the novel. And obviously he is on the show right now, so he's going to be doing that for us later today. But I think, or later on this episode, but I was thinking, Chris, we should do that at the end. So as we, after we go through the whole movie, or as you, as it goes along, if you hear any, if anything pops up, you're like, oh, here's a, here's something that to talk about, feel free to chime in with it. Just either as we go along or anything left over, just talk about it at the end. Sound good?
I need a button to press so that can be like a jingle. So it can be like, and now it's Chris's Bond book chat.
Or you just use the music cue from the Bond. Da-da-da-da.
Blang.
Either that or we do the like a weird music cue that appears in each movie that's unique to the film. So in this one, it's that do-do-do-do-do-do.
Or just a soundbite from Jimmy Dean.
Bah. Bah.
We both went there.
Bah. Tell him he's fired.
I unabashedly love Jimmy Dean's performance. And by the way, listeners, yes, that Jimmy Dean, the Breakfast King Jimmy Dean, is in this movie. This was before he created his sausage empire.
For Americans, Jimmy Dean is a popular brand of breakfast sausage.
And yeah, so what a wild casting choice too. So the movie opens. We'll jump into the movie now. The movie opens with Bond, once again played by Sean Connery. Connery has returned, and he is interrogating a series of people trying to find Blofeld. Because for those who remember, at the end of On Her Majesty's Secret Service, Blofeld and Irma Bunt killed Bond's wife, Tracy. And this movie jumps off to immediately after that in some of the most, I don't know, it is so unsatisfying.
Well, it starts off with him beating up a Japanese guy.
Then it tells a really shitty joke where, you know, first off, the ADR doesn't match. He says, "Where's Blofeld?" And he goes, "Cairo," but the dude's mouth doesn't move at all.
And then there's a really unsatisfying punch at the guy in Cairo.
Yes, and it's a shitty joke where he's playing like blackjack or whatever, and he goes, "Hit me," and then Bond turns him around and hits him. Huh. See what they did there? So clever. And then they tell him to go see this woman. Do you remember the name of the woman? I'm blanking on it. It's like, go see so and so.
It's like Maria. Maria.
Yeah. And he goes to see Maria, some random lady on a beach, and just strangles her with her own bikini top. And you see a little bit of nip. There's a smidge of nip in it, too.
Yes, that's the issue here.
At this point, you could tell that the podcast was being produced by three men.
I apologize to
you. A married guy with a kid made that joke, too.
It is just such a wild thing. And like, when I was watching it, I'm just like, what? This is awful. He's strangling her with her own bikini top. And like the visuals of it are just so uncomfortable to look at.
The thing I find really bizarre about this scene, apart from, you know, the abuse, when Sean Connery comes down onto the beach, the audio for him saying the very iconic line, "My name is Bond, James Bond," is really choppy. He's like, "My name is Bond, James Bond." Yet the trailer for the film has a much better audio cut where it sounds, I don't know, natural, human, might be another word for it. And I have no idea why that happens. So if you can, check out the initial trailer for Diamonds Are Forever and you'll hear a much better version of that scene.
That's so weird. I almost wonder if it was like, how the movie is a little over 2 hours long, so maybe that extra second was like they needed to cut it out. You know, it can't be 2 hours and 8 seconds long.
Like, whew, we could have made the credits go like 0.25 faster, but that second, we've got it there, lads.
We've got it. So then you don't really hear her respond, but he goes over. He ends up at some place where Blofeld is, and it's very clear that they're trying to do plastic surgery on Blofeld. And this is one of the most bizarre casting choices for Blofeld, I think, because this dude plays a different character in You Only Live Twice. He plays Bond's, like, not counterpart, contact in Japan. Yeah. Played by Charles Gray, who is one of the most British men I've ever seen in my life.
Absolutely.
See, I don't mind this casting, actually. I like it in a way. He's very droll as Blofeld. Very droll, yes.
It suits the film perfectly. I thought his performance as Dicko Henderson in You Only Live Twice was pretty good, but obviously very short. I think after having Teddy Savalas, who's obviously a very physically intimidating Blofeld, to have one who seemed to have the mental edge and that overriding confidence, I thought the choice was fantastic. And actually, there's a few moments in this film I love in particular, and I'll bring those up when we get to them.
See, I don't quite feel he has the mental edge over anyone.
He's definitely got a mental edge. I can see what you're saying, Chris. He's very sly. He's very upper crust, and he knows what he's trying to do. And plus, this is one of the more clever Blofeld ploys. And they reference this in the game Evil Genius. They reference how you're trying to get one of your henchmen, your minions, to look like you, so you get assassinated and get away with it. Sorry about the spoilers, folks. I know if you're watching this, you might not know how Bond works, but...
Well, it's okay. I'm sure they'd never actually get rid of Blofeld in a really anticlimactic opening sequence in another film in the Bond franchise.
Or in any other movie. I feel like, in all honesty,
bring him back decades later with a different actor.
I genuinely think there's never really been... Actually, with the exception of in No Time to Die, which I won't spoil how they defeat Blofeld in No Time to Die. It's very different than what you'd expect, though.
Oh, does Brad Pitt arrive?
With the exception in No Time to Die, I don't think Blofeld has ever had a satisfying defeat in any Bond film. Definitely not in You Only Live Twice. You don't really see him prior to that. You only kind of get hints of him. Definitely not in obviously... On Her Majesty's Secret Service, and definitely not in this. But the movie opens with Blofeld. They kind of pull a double fake on you, where they want you to think he's getting plastic surgery. Now, the plastic surgery in this is questionable at best. I think that's even being way too generous to describe what they think plastic surgery is in this. It pretty much just involves putting a human being inside a giant plate, a giant tub of mud, just gross looking, vomit, diarrhea looking mud.
Oh, and then there's a gun.
And then there's now, fun fact, you know what the mud was made out of?
Oh, do we want to know, man?
Oh, I know this. What was it? It's potatoes. I can't remind me. That's it, potatoes.
Potatoes.
Perfect for the week of St. Patrick's Day. Oh, they made the mud out of potatoes, Tommy. They made the mud out of potatoes.
I'm just so flabbergasted. And the fact that, and they even talk about in the behind the scenes how bad these potatoes smelled. So the actors who are being submerged in these things, specifically the one that Bond takes out, he lifts his head up out of it and washes his face off, and then sets it back, and you can see it going up his nose. And I get so uncomfortable every time I watch
bastard.
It. But before Bond takes him out, he, for some reason, this dude sitting in a tub of just slop, you don't know why he's in there, but he's got a pistol. I'm pretty sure that wouldn't work.
How else do you
actually off? Here's the thing. You can get one shot off. A revolver is a very rugged type of weapon, so he'd have one shot and maybe two, but after that the barrel's gonna jam, you got nothing.
Okay, so he could have, it's just, I, so even
it's
if it does work,
ditch weapon.
The idea of him just bringing in a revolver into his plastic surgery, whatever.
That's a bit of a contamination issue was the bigger thing.
Pretty much.
Maybe the gun was having plastic surgery too. We just don't know.
Okay, so we're going to take your hammer, shorten it a bit. We're going to take your rounds. We're going to make them a little bigger. Your men will love it.
We're going to look like an Uzi. We're going to turn your revolver into an Uzi.
There are so many gun nuts who will listen to this just going, no!